Right now, the fiercest rivals in the cutthroat humanoid robotics industry are doing something just completely unthinkable.
Oh, absolutely unthinkable.
Right. I mean, imagine executives who basically spend their days locked in this brutal price war, actively trying to destroy each other's profit margins.
Yeah.
But instead of fighting, they are sitting side by side in a Beijing conference room. They're shaking hands, and they are actively giving away their billion-dollar secrets for free.
It's wild.
It is. And today, we are doing a deep dive into exactly why that's happening.
You know, it is a completely jarring image. If you only look at it through the lens of like traditional Western capitalism, you just don't expect bitter rivals to suddenly act like colleagues on a shared project. But what we're unpacking today from these early 2026 industry reports is an incredibly aggressive, highly coordinated strategy.
Which is just fascinating.
It really is. China's currently moving massive geopolitical and financial mountains to absolutely dominate the global humanoid robot industry. And this moment, early 2026, is the turning point.
And for you listening, whether you follow tech closely or you're just, wondering when a robot is finally going to start folding your laundry.
Which we're all waiting for, right?
Exactly. We are getting into the real mechanics of how this ecosystem actually works. Because we aren't just talking about metal and motors here.
No, not at all.
We are looking at a giant, synchronized machine made of government standards, open source warfare, academic pipelines, and billions of dollars in colliding global capital.
And we really need to distill how this complex ecosystem functions, because this is about so much more than just building cool hardware.
Right.
It's a global race that honestly, most of the world is only just realizing has even started.
So let's jump right into that Beijing conference room. It's February 28, 2026. You have Wang Jingxing from Unitree. You have Peng Jiwei from Agibot, the guy the industry actually calls the genius youth.
Right, yeah.
And you have Zhang Yujin from Ubitech. Now, out in the real world, Unitree is literally slashing their robot prices down to 99,000 RMB.
Which is just a total bloodbath.
It's a massive bloodbath. It's forcing everyone else to bleed money just to stay relevant. But inside this room, they are united. They're on this standardization committee called HEIS.
Yeah, the AIS committee.
Right. And they are sitting down and literally writing the rules for the industry together.
So, to understand why they are suddenly playing nice, we have to rewind slightly to late 2023.
Okay, let's go back.
So, China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, the MIT released document 193, and this was a massive, massive declaration.
Because it wasn't just a regular memo.
Exactly. The government officially categorized humanoid robots not just as, another piece of factory machinery, but as a disruptive innovation on the exact same level as the invention of the smartphone.
Or the EV, right?
Yes, or the electric vehicle. And to control a disruption of that magnitude, the MIT basically forced the entire domestic industry to adopt a common language.
And that's where they divided the anatomy of the robot into three very distinct parts. You've got the brain, which handles the foundation models and the AI. Then the cerebellum, which takes care of like physical motion control and balance. And finally, the limbs, which is just the hardware, the actuators, the physical skeleton.
And that breakdown is so crucial because it creates a standardized taxonomy for the entire country.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second because I want to make sure I'm getting this right. Is this basically like forcing every single tech company to use a USB-C cable?
Oh, that's good.
But applied to the entire complex anatomy of a robot.
That is a brilliant way to frame it, actually. Just think about the sheer amount of friction it eliminates.
Right, because everyone is on the same page.
Exactly. If a VC, a venture capitalist, is evaluating a brand new robotics startup, they don't have to spend weeks trying to understand some completely proprietary, closed-off system.
Oh, I see.
They can just look at the founders and ask, okay, whose brain are you using and whose cerebellum are you
Oh,
using?
that makes it so much easier.
It dictates how local governments hand out subsidies. It dictates how investors measure value. It streamlines everything.
Which brings us right back to that 2026 HEIS committee meeting.
Yeah.
Because those rivals, they passed a comprehensive six-part standard that covers everything.
From basic terminology to brain-computer interfaces.
Right, all the way to safety and ethics. And when you look at the sources, the playbook here is incredibly deliberate. It's the exact same strategy Huawei used to dominate 5G.
It really is. Huawei used China's massive domestic market to establish an undeniable baseline standard, right? And then they pushed that standard out into global institutions. So by standardizing humanoid robots domestically first, China is preparing to do the exact same thing on a global scale.
But the part that really stood out to me is that they included safety and ethics.
Yes. What's fascinating here is that the inclusion of safety and ethics isn't just some philosophical exercise. It is what analysts call normative weaponization.
Okay, normative weaponization. That sounds super intense. What does that actually mean in practice for, you know, the industry?
Well, it basically acts as a defensive moat against future geopolitical pushback.
Okay.
Look at it this way. If Western nations decide, say, 5 years down the road, to ban these Chinese robots from their markets, and they cite concerns over AI safety or ethical programming.
Which is totally plausible.
Highly plausible. If they do that, China will have a built-in structural counterargument ready to go.
Oh, because they wrote the rules.
Exactly. They can say, wait, how can you ban us for safety violations? We literally wrote the global safety standards. Our robots define what safe is.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they are planting the flag and writing the dictionary before anyone else even reaches the hill.
It's incredibly strategic.
But that brings up a really practical problem, I think. Because writing a standard on a piece of paper in Beijing is one thing.
Sure.
How do you actually force hundreds of cutthroat independent startups to build on your exact standard?
Right, because you can't just mandate innovation. So you make it economically impossible for them to refuse. And you do that by shifting your strategy from government regulation to raw, undeniable market gravity.
In other words, you just give away the most expensive parts for free.
Yes. And we need to look at the sheer scale of what is being handed out here because it's massive.
Right. In Beijing, a state-backed center launched what they call the Tiangong Open Source Plan.
Mm-hmm.
And they literally took the core hardware and software for a humanoid robot, one capable of running like 12 kilometers an hour, and they just made it entirely public.
Just open to anyone.
The 3D model formats, the structural blueprints, the control algorithms for navigating complex terrain, all of it just free.
And it wasn't just blueprints either. The data dumps happening at the exact same time are staggering.
So, yeah, the data.
Beijing released RoboMind, which is a data set with 55,000 real-world robot trajectories.
Mm.
And then Shanghai went even further with Agibot World, releasing millions of trajectories. To put that in perspective, that is 10 times the size of Google's OpenX embodiment data set.
10 times the size of Google's. That is insane.
It is. And if we connect this to the everyday reality of a startup founder, building a functional robot skeleton from scratch is brutal.
Right, I'd imagine.
You're figuring out the complex physics, the balance, the control stack. It costs tens of millions of dollars before you ever have a physical product to sell.
So by giving away the Tiangong model in Beijing, and then that other full-scale open-source model, King Long, in Shanghai.
The state is acting like a massive gravitational vacuum.
It just sucks all the new startups directly into their specific ecosystem.
Exactly. Because a founder doesn't need to raise $50 million just to build a leg that walks anymore.
Right. They can just download the Beijing or Shanghai framework, and then they focus their limited capital on building, I don't know, a specific marketable application on top of it.
Yes. And this reveals the ultimate goal here, which is aggressively pushing out the Western standard.
You mean ROS?
Right. For years, the robot operating system, or ROS, has been the global open source default. Think of ROS as like the Windows or Android of the robotics world. It's everywhere.
So China wants to replace that global baseline with a completely Chinese vertical ecosystem.
Exactly. A closed loop system.
Yeah.
It's much closer to Apple's iOS model, where the underlying architecture is deeply integrated and entirely domestically controlled.
Okay, wait, hold on. I have to push back on this a little
bit. Sure, go for it.
Because look, giving away the razor to sell the blades is a classic business move. We've seen that a million times.
Right.
But here, the state isn't just giving away the razor. They are handing everyone the keys to the entire razor factory.
That's a fair point.
So if the state is mandating that everyone use the exact same free skeleton and the exact same free data, aren't we just going to get a market flooded with like a million identical state-sponsored clones?
That's a huge risk.
I mean, where does genuine billion-dollar innovation actually come from in a purely free state-mandated model?
That is the critical vulnerability in any top-down system. And it is exactly where the human element of this ecosystem comes into play.
Okay.
The state can provide the free skeleton and the massive data sets, sure, but they can't force a market breakthrough. For that, this ecosystem relies on a very specific type of person to turn that raw, free data into a commercial empire.
Right, they need the founders.
Exactly, a new breed of academic entrepreneurs.
And the pipeline producing these founders is wild when you look at the sources. I mean, take Wang He, for example.
Oh, Wang He is a perfect example.
He's a 1992-born Stanford PhD. He comes back to Peking University, founds a company called Galbit, and within 2.5 years, his company hits a $3 billion valuation.
It's just meteoric growth.
$3 billion mm-hmm. in 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And then you have Chen Jianyu at Tsinghua University. He founds Robot Era and secures roughly ₩1 billion from Geely, which is a massive auto manufacturer.
And what is vital to understand here is that this pipeline from a university lab bench straight to a $1 billion valuation is not accidental.
It's designed that way.
Deeply and intentionally institutionalized. Tsinghua University actually merged 4 entirely different academic departments in 2025, specifically to forge a new embodied AI and robotics institute.
So they are physically aligning their heaviest academic hitters directly with the national strategy.
Yes, but the universities aren't operating in a vacuum either. The think tanks are the ones actually directing the traffic.
Right. Groups like the CIE, the Chinese Institute of Electronics, and GGII, a major robotics research institute.
Exactly. The CIE basically acts like a national traffic cop. They publish these formal lists declaring which specific industries are going to integrate robots first.
Like auto manufacturing or power generation.
Right. And let's look at the mechanics of how that think tank list actually creates a billionaire like Wang He.
Yeah, let's break that down.
It is not just a white paper. When the CIE publishes that priority list, it acts as a signaling mechanism for state capital.
Oh, okay.
Suddenly, state-owned banks are highly incentivized to offer really favorable loans to state-owned auto factories.
And then those factories use that subsidized money to buy the robots.
Exactly. So before Wang He or Chen Jianyu even finish building their prototypes in the university lab, a guaranteed, well-funded market has already been mandated into existence for them.
Wow. Which perfectly explains the wild market forecasting happening right now.
It does.
I mean, so sources point out that GGII published a massive forecast predicting the humanoid robot market would hit ₩400 billion by 2035.
A staggering number.
But here is where it gets really interesting to me. If you look at Western financial institutions like Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley, they are looking at the exact same global market. But their forecasts are wildly different from GGI's.
Very different.
We're talking about a variance of 10 times. So my question is, are these Chinese think tanks actually predicting the market, or are they just like manifesting it through sheer belief in government funding?
Oh, they're absolutely manifesting it.
Yeah.
When an institute like GGII publishes a number as massive as ₩400 billion, they aren't just making a passive guess about the future. They are providing the necessary bureaucratic justification for venture capitalists and local municipal governments to pour billions of dollars into the sector today.
That makes so much sense.
The real competitive advantage we are looking at here isn't the physical hardware of the robots. Anyone can build a motor.
Then what is the actual advantage?
It's what we can call the master gearbox of state capitalism.
Oh, the master gearbox. I like that.
It is the unparalleled ability to align the central government, local city municipalities, top-tier university labs, state-backed capital, and private enterprise, and physically gear them all to push in the exact same direction at the exact same time.
That's a phenomenal image. But, you know, all those massive gears spinning at that kind of velocity, they require an astronomical amount of grease.
They absolutely do.
Where exactly is all this money coming from? Because scaling a company to a $3 billion valuation in 2 years burns an unbelievable amount of cash.
Yeah, robotics is notoriously capital intensive.
And what happens when global geopolitics suddenly throws a wrench into those perfectly aligned gears?
Well, to understand the flow of the money, you have to look at the structure of the capital itself, because it is flowing in from very different directions, and each stream comes with its own unique strings attached.
Okay, so let's map it out. First, you have the top-down money. The sources outline a staggering ₩60 billion national AI fund.
Mm-hmm.
And what's crucial is that this fund isn't just handing out basic research grants, right?
Mm-hmm.
It acts as bait.
Yes. The bait mechanism is how you leverage state money to move private markets.
How does that work?
So if a massive, risky robotics project needs funding, private venture capitalists might hesitate. It's too risky. But when the National AI Fund puts down its money first, it dramatically de-risks the entire investment.
Oh, I see. It signals to local city governments and private VCs that the central authority supports this company.
Exactly. So $1 of state bait money might actually unlock $10 of private and local investment.
That is so clever.
Yeah.
And then there is the side door money. You have the domestic big tech players jumping in, like Tencent and Alibaba.
Right.
You have heavyweight venture capital firms like Sequoia China and Hill House. But the capital source that really surprised me was the Middle Eastern oil money.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge shift.
Saudi Aramco's venture arm, Prosperity 7 Ventures, is pouring millions of dollars into Chinese robotics companies. We're talking Fori Intelligence, Spirit AI, Galbit.
And that Saudi connection is a vital piece of the puzzle here, because Prosperity 7 is not just acting like a traditional VC looking for, you know, a 10x financial return on a spreadsheet.
Right. It's bigger than that.
They are engaged in a strategic geopolitical trade. In exchange for providing this massive early stage capital,
yeah,
Saudi Arabia is securing direct pipelines to bring these advanced robotics technologies back to their own domestic market.
Wow. It is quite literally oil money trading for the foundational technological infrastructure of the future.
Precisely.
But right as all this capital, the state bait, the big tech money, the Saudi oil funds is colliding and pushing the industry forward, we hit that geopolitical wrench you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, the frick.
And just a quick reminder for you listening, we are strictly looking at the tensions detailed in the reports here. We are maintaining complete neutrality on the politics. We are just looking at the facts on the ground.
Absolutely, because the tension itself is what impacts the market, regardless of the politics behind it.
Right. So we see this massive, jarring contradiction hit the industry in May of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
At the exact same time that Unitree, one of those major companies leading the ECIS standardization committee, was prepping for an enormous $610 million IPO in Shanghai.
The entire U.S. Congress was actively petitioning to blacklist them.
Yes. It's such a crazy juxtaposition.
The push from the U.S. Congress was to officially designate Unitree as a Chinese military company. And the justification for this blacklist was that Unitree's quadruped robot dogs had been observed training with the People's Liberation Army.
Right. The reports mentioned instances during joint military exercises where the robotic dogs were actually equipped with rifles.
Yeah. And the business implication of that blacklist is just staggering.
If that goes through, it poses an existential risk to their global expansion. I think the sources said it could potentially close off 55% of Unitree's entire export market overnight.
Right. It creates a profoundly schizophrenic environment for a robotics company trying to scale.
Seriously.
In the Eastern Hemisphere, they are the absolute darling of the capital markets. They're handed hundreds of millions of dollars to expand as fast as possible.
But in the Western Hemisphere, they are viewed as a direct national security threat and potentially locked out of the market entirely.
It's a massive contradiction.
And to make matters even more complicated, if you dig into Unitree's own IPO prospectus, there is a serious reality check buried in the numbers.
Oh, the sales numbers.
Yes. Despite the $610 million valuation, and despite claiming that this is the dawn of humanoid mass production, and despite selling over 5,500 robots globally,
nearly 74% of their sales went to research and education.
Right. Only 9% actually went to industrial manufacturing.
And that 9% statistic is incredibly revealing. It strips away a lot of the futuristic marketing.
Yeah, it really does.
It tells us that the vast majority of these highly advanced robots are still just being bought by university labs and research institutions who are trying to figure out how they work.
So they're not yet being bought by factory bosses looking to actually replace human labor on an active assembly line.
Exactly. Yeah. It's essentially very expensive lab equipment at this point.
So let's pull all of this together. I want you listening to this to just ponder this massive contradiction for a second.
It's a lot to weigh.
You have a company being pulled upward by the gravity of a $610 million IPO on one side and pulled downward by a U.S. congressional blacklist on the other.
Mm-hmm.
You have billions of dollars in state and Saudi capital flooding the zone. And all of this intense high-stakes friction is over a product that is still mostly being bought by researchers, not actual factory workers.
Right.
So is this entire ecosystem just a giant state-funded bubble waiting to pop? Or is this simply the messy, wildly expensive reality of what it looks like to build the future before anyone else does?
Well, I think to truly understand this, Stace, you cannot just look at the mechanics of the robots. You really have to look at the mechanics of the capital.
Okay, unpack that a bit.
The state funds acting as bait, the long-term strategic bets from Saudi Arabia, the sheer mandated force of the local municipalities, they are all successfully propping up and accelerating the industry.
Right. The gearbox is working.
It is. But simultaneously, that same capital structure pulls these companies directly into the center of a global geopolitical conflict.
Yeah.
The master gearbox we talked about earlier is unmatched at generating forward momentum. But a gearbox that is hardwired to the state lacks a braking system.
Oh, wow.
If the capital dries up or the international export markets close entirely due to blacklists, the machine cannot easily be stopped or turned around.
It's a high-stakes gamble on a scale we've rarely seen.
Truly.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Today, we've unpacked how China's robotics industry is far more than just building cool humanoid hardware. It is a massive, highly coordinated bet. We've looked at how they are forcing standardized languages on the industry, engaging in open-source warfare to hook startups into their ecosystem, building state-funded pipelines straight from the academic lab to billion-dollar valuations, and navigating the colliding forces of global capital.
It is a complete ecosystem designed from the ground up to win by sheer synchronized force.
Which brings us to a final thought I want to leave you with, something to chew on that builds on everything we've explored today.
Let's hear it.
As these humanoid robots eventually move out of the university lab and into our homes, our hospitals, and our workplaces, and as they are powered by these aggressively standardized, state-backed, open-source models, we really have to ask a difficult question.
Yeah.
What happens when the physical machines doing our laundry and guarding our factories become literal proxies for national influence?
That's a heavy thought.
If standardizing a robot's internal ethics is considered a geopolitical weapon, will buying a household appliance in the near future feel like declaring a geopolitical allegiance?
It completely changes the definition of what a consumer product actually is.
It really does. Yeah. So the next time you see cutthroat competitors sitting side by side, smiling for the cameras, remember the immense coordinated machinery operating just beneath the surface.
Great point.
Keep questioning the world around you, and we will see you on the next deep dive.